Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, and we are so happy to have John Katz with us this hour. He has a new book. I plowed right through it because I love dogs, and I love his writing. He's just a terrific writer. And this book is an interesting one and very moving because a good chunk of the book deals with the hospice work that John did. He became a hospice volunteer along with a dog who initially seemed like an unlikely candidate to be a hospice volunteer, but seemed to know instinctively not only how to be a hospice volunteer, but how to appear on television. John is the author of Izzy and Lenore, Two Dogs, Unexpected Journey, and Me. And he, of course, has written all kinds of books. We've interviewed him many times. He's written 15 books, 6 novels, 9 works of nonfiction, including A Dog Year, The Dogs of Bedlam Farm, and A Good Dog. A 2-time finalist for the National Magazine Award. He writes a column about dogs for the online magazine Slate. He's written for the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Rolling Stone, GQ, and the AKC Gazette. He has an award-winning show, Dog Talk, on Northeast Public Radio. And he lives on this farm, Bedlam Farm, and he writes about the animals who he lives with and I'm not kidding you. Makes you want to get a donkey. Maybe others want to go out and buy a steer or a couple cats or some sheep or a lot of dogs or cats because that's a quality of his writing. He makes you become attached to these animals and actually long for them their companionship yourself. We're welcoming phone calls for John. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, or talk@WPR.org. Hello, John.
Hello, Kathleen. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, our pleasure. Our pleasure. I read your book on Saturday night as I took my son to the first ever homecoming dance, and there I was reading your book with my dog in my lap.
Well, that's the way to do it. That's the way to go.
Yeah, it was. It was great. So Izzy, the thing that was amazing to me about her story, and maybe you can't really answer this either, is how Izzy instinctively knew how to do everything, how to be with people who are dying, and how to be on television, for heaven's sake.
Well, Izzy's an amazing creature. You know, he was abandoned on a farm in upstate New York. He lived the first 5 years of his life outdoors. He was never, sorry, I have a bit of a cold.
Oh.
He was never really in a house. He was never at a vet. When I saw him, he was running around in circles, kind of covered in all kinds of mess and crud. So we captured him, tackled him, brought him home, went through the many border collie dramas of rebellion and confusion and chaos, dismantling crates, eating paneling off the walls, having accidents. And then we got him under control. He calmed down. And it kind of emerged out of all this, this amazingly calm, intuitive dog who really is interested and reacts to the need and attention of people. We became hospice volunteers together. We went through training together. And we started going around the Adirondacks and other places to help out people who are what we call on the edge of life. And it was amazing how both of us took to it. But I must say, Izzy in particular seems to react powerfully to people's need and interest in him. And he helps guide them along the end of their lives. It's quite something to see.
Were you surprised that you two took to it as well, John? You would normally think this is a very hard thing to do. I worked with hospice. Well, my dad died almost a year ago, and
Sorry. He
was in hospice. And I must tell you that the people who work in hospice are marvelous, and it's an important – and I hadn't spent as much time with somebody who's dying and who I loved as dearly in my whole life, and – it's quite a process. You find yourself really in the deepest kinds of emotions, don't you?
You do. It's really the most intimate part of life, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And people warn me it's going to be depressing. You won't like it. Be careful about it. And it did open me up in many ways. It did challenge me. I have to say, the hospice work was nothing but uplifting. We went in there with Izzy. He meant the world to people. He was very comforting. People talked to him. They touched him. They loved to hang out with him. I was very struck in the hospice work at the isolation of the people I was seeing. They seemed to be often they just seemed shunned almost by much of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
People didn't come by. People didn't know what to say. Their families were there with them often. But it was lonely and it was difficult. And so coming in with a dog was amazing. as you know, mm-hmm. it just makes all the difference in the world when somebody comes in the door and says, "Well, I'm just here. I care about you.
Right.
And I'm thinking about you." And it's a great relief for the family. We're often very tired and very drained. And our society just does not, as you know, want to deal much with the subject. So when you go into these hospice homes, people tell you again and again, you know, their neighbors don't come by and their family often has a hard time with it. And there's nobody there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where hospice, I think, is great. It helps people make the choices. And when you come in with a dog, that's the part that really surprised me, because I wouldn't have thought that at that point in life a dog would make such an enormous difference to people, but he does.
Mm-hmm. Why did you go this route? Why did you do hospice?
I was intrigued with hospice for years, and I was afraid of it.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to do something, especially with the dogs, that would connect me more to people. I think I was looking for greater connections to people. And also, as I'm getting older, I'm getting to late middle age, and I thought, you know, it's something I want to know more about and think more about. But mostly, I think the big factor for me was this is really something I can do. This is, you know, there are all these people in the circumstance. They really need volunteers. They need help. It just seemed very meaningful to me. It meant something that really mattered.
Right.
The fact that I could possibly do it with a dog, you know, when the hospice volunteer coordinator suggested a dog, we were both very skeptical about it. Because, they, you know, dogs are tricky in hospice work because, as you know, the patient can almost never come to you. You have to get to the patient.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in hospital beds and wheelchairs and uncomfortable positions. It's very tricky to get to them. And they're often uncomfortable or on medication or on oxygen or IV. So you need a dog that has a very particular combination of groundedness, calmness, intuitiveness. He always knows who the patient is. He knows how to get to them. He finds a way to get near them. He's very calm around them. He looks them in the eye, and they talk to him.
I know. It's just incredible.
And they just do. They just talk to him. I have some pictures of it I put in the book, too, because it opened me up as a photographer as well.
Hmm.
So I think, you know, that experience was just nothing but satisfying and uplifting, and we made wonderful friends. I think I encountered more love and more affection in the hospice families than I've ever encountered in my life.
Oh, my. Good for you. And they would talk to him, and sometimes these people just hadn't been able to put two words together for years. But they talked to Izzy.
It was striking. One of the first people we saw was Glenn, a logger in the Adirondacks. And, you know, this is a logger. He'd been driving around a logging truck forever. He had prostate cancer. And the social workers were worried about him because he just didn't talk much. And he wasn't dealing with his illness very much. So we went in there with Izzy, and Izzy sits up on the bed and looks him in the eye, and Glenn just started talking to him. He started crying and telling him stories about his dog, Pal, and how they used to ride around in the truck together, and how at lunch there used to be a can of beans for Pal and a can of beans for Glenn. And they sat, you know, when they were stranded in storms, they kept each other company, kept each other warm. He talked to this dog for 14 years in the truck. And he just started telling these stories to Izzy, and would wait for Izzy to come in every day and eager to talk to him, eager to talk about Pal and other things. And then one day he just said, you know, Izzy, I'm done. And he just died the next day.
Oh, my.
And you could see how through Izzy he was able to say things he wouldn't say to a person, wasn't comfortable talking about with a person, and just come to terms with his death. It was very powerful.
Mm-hmm. And how do you think all of this happened with a dog who had such a troubled past? I mean, Izzy was abandoned. Izzy was on her own for a long period of time.
Well, I think for, you know, it's a horrible thing for a dog to be abandoned like that, and I think it makes us cringe, but I think if you're a border collie, it's a little different. It's not the worst thing in the world for them. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't recommend it, but I think there was a caretaker who brought him food. But I think in a way, it just left him undamaged. It just left him kind of in this suspended state of animation where nothing bad had happened to him in terms of abuse, so he just wasn't damaged. And I think when he was calmed down and trained and sort of found his human, he became the dog he was at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I think had he been abused or starved or something like that, he might have been unable to do that kind of work. But it seemed like after a few months of crisis and a few months of training and a few months of challenge, I think the natural grounding and quality of the dog kind of emerged. That's my best theory. But he does have a remarkable gift for what I call one-on-one you know, interactions with people. He looks people in the eye. He connects with them. And if you need him and want to talk to him, he reacts to that. Mm-hmm. If you don't, he kind of ignores you. He finds very powerful bonds with members of the family. Usually in hospice, when the patient begins to die, begins to gather him or herself, the family becomes a little needier. And so Izzy will often shift as well to one member of the family and attach to them. And he goes to the funeral, and he goes to the gravesite.
My.
And he just is part of the entire process, and people are just crazy about him.
Yeah, they are, aren't they? Everybody is just crazy about him. You would bring him into places where, well, the other thing that was amazing to me is you can take Izzy anywhere, busy street, he's your dog. He doesn't leave you. And the television studio, tell that story, it's funny, John, where he sits in the chair ready to be interviewed.
It was really a strange thing because Izzy loves the media, and which is good. And we were asked to go on CNN. It was something during one of the pet food recall dramas, and we limousined into studio in Albany. And so I'm sitting in the chair, and the red light comes on, and there were two chairs, but I was the only guest. And I'm looking in that, I hear everybody's laughing, and the anchor, Paul, is on. At some point, says, well, you know, do you want me to ask your dog a question? And Izzy had hopped up in the chair next to me and was sitting there staring in the camera the entire interview. As long as the red light was on, he never moved. And when the interview was over, he just sort of hopped off the chair. And this is what he does. You know, he just, where, you know, you walk into a bookstore or and Izzy comes in and finds a corner, greets all the people. He loves women. He's very partial to blondes. And you can take him absolutely any place. As long as I'm with him, he's comfortable to be there.
You didn't know that you weren't the only guest on that show. He knew that.
He knew who the real guest was, actually.
Yeah, he is the real guest. Well, I'll never forget, and I should do this kind of work as well. I can't do it with the dog I have because he's a little bit too high strung. Maybe I could if I spent time on it. But when my dad was really failing and sleeping a good portion of the day and not able to communicate, I saw this. It was a coonhound, some kind of red, beautiful coonhound who was in, unfortunately, the nursing home where he was. And you talk about nursing homes. I didn't want him to be there, but I couldn't convince him to move to Milwaukee from Chicago. And I saw this 8-month-old puppy who was walking down the hall with his owner. And I said, oh, you've got to go visit my dad. Please come visit my dad. And she said, okay, I'll be there. And I was just reading him stories and talking, and he wasn't awake. And I took that dog, and he nuzzled an 8-month-old puppy right under Dad's arm. And my dad woke up immediately and started petting this dog with this huge smile on my dad's face. And I just sat there crying. It was such a moment, John. And my dad's always been a dog lover and found the dog for me that I have now. And you realize that the powerful thing that was going on in that room, it was that this dog, he didn't know who. My dad woke up and was as happy as he could be. What a sight. Yeah. I'll never forget that. Yeah.
Why do you think he reacted to the dog like that?
I think it was because it was this gentle dog who was nuzzling with him, and that dogs had always brought my dad such happiness. He always had a dog. We remembered all our dogs. He loved my dog. He had picked out my dog for me, and it just probably brought back childhood in his life and everything.
Right.
Why do you think? I mean, why does
well, it? I think that's right. I think that's exactly right. I think dogs just touch chords in people that are pleasant and warm and
mm-hmm.
happy.
Mm-hmm.
And they think of them and they smile and they remember good times in their life. And it's very comforting. I also think because dogs are such great listeners, they don't have to talk to them and they don't really want to talk to people.
Right.
You know, they're tired and they're distracted and they're getting ready to die. And they don't really want to have maybe intense conversations with people. So talking to a dog is easier. The dog is more unconditionally loving. And the hospice also preaches the idea of the active listener. And dogs are the world's greatest active listeners. And I think it's very soothing to people. It just brings back a better time for them.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you're doing some hospice with Lenore now. We've talked about Izzy. Let's go to Lenore for a while. You're gorgeous. What a picture on the cover. What a gorgeous dog. Your gorgeous black lab puppy who's all love. You know, just I love this description of Lenore, who is a mood elevator and has a profoundly sweet nature.
She's a great dog. You know, I have a theory that we sometimes get the dogs we need. And we just go get the dogs we need, and that was the case. You know, it was a tough winter for me. I experienced some depression really for the first time. Winter upstate New York can be pretty bleak. It gets, you know, cold and dark early, and think the hospice work was definitely challenging in that way. I certainly found it uplifting, but it was certainly, we lost a lot of people. And so I went into this funk, and it was disturbing to me. And I called a breeder, who's a friend of mine, and I said, you know, when I know she had a litter. I said, I'm not looking for a dog right now. And she said, well, why don't you come on over? And so we went over there, and there was this little puppy who crawls in my lap and puts her head on my shoulder and goes to sleep. And so the breeder's writing out the papers, you know. I said, well, I'm not sure I want a dog. So I brought Lenore home, and this was a dog I really needed. This was a dog who just, you can't look at her and not smile. You can see from the picture. I took that picture. That's my first cover.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And she just smiles. She just, you have to laugh. I call her the love dog and the hound of love. And she's a big overgrown puppy and a doof. And you just look at her and you just laugh. And the world seems a brighter place. And you feel, you know, she is all about love. And she reminds you whatever you need the reminding that love is alive and love feels good.
Mm, it sure does.
She, by the way, became a hospice therapy dog. On her first visit, she ate one of the patient's cheeseburgers. And, you know, anybody who has a lab understands what people mean when they say, who took my cheeseburger? Where's my cheeseburger? And you know exactly where to go.
And it was probably okay, right? Because she's that adorable.
She was that adorable. She gets away with anything. She gets away with absolutely anything.
So tell me, did the dogs and who foremost help you through your dark time? And it was a dark time for you. And I understand that kind of time as well. You just had a hard time functioning for a while.
I did have a hard time. It was like I fell into a black hole. It was very dark and very down, and the world seemed very bleak, and I didn't feel well, and it was just very, I never experienced that before, although a lot of people have. I wrote about it on my website. I wrote about it in the book. I wanted to be open about it because I thought it was important. A lot of people say to me, well, you know, if somebody like you goes through that, maybe I can make it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got help. I went to a therapist, and, you know, I believe in help. I believe in getting help. And I wrote about that as well, and I think the dogs, two things really happened. I mean, the hospice work was something I did when I felt bad, I believe it or not. I mean, it was something I did that made me feel better, because when you walk into a house with Izzy, just as you described your father and the coonhound, people feel better.
Right.
People appreciate it. People are uplifted, and that's nothing but good.
Mm-hmm.
Lenore was just, you know, like a love button. You just, you know, she would lumber into bed, put her head on my shoulder, and lick me on the nose five times, start snoring, and you just can't feel too bleak about life when that's happening.
How true. You just can't. You also connected with your sister, too. That was a moving part of the book to me.
Well, my sister, as you know, I'd had a somewhat of a distant relationship with her. She'd have a lot of troubles with addiction when she was young. She became a drug addict, and she disappeared. I didn't know where she was for a long time, maybe 10 or 15 years.
Goodness.
We were very close. But she just disappeared. And so she actually came across one of my books and contacted me. We got back in touch. During the bleakest of the depression, when a really black day, I just picked up the phone and called her. And I don't know why I called her. I guess I felt she just would understand, and she did. That's the thing about family, you know. They just know where you come from.
Mm-hmm.
And she had been through somewhat the same thing. So we began these, you know, thank God for OnStar. You know, I had this. I called her 100,000 times from the road, and she helped me tremendously. She did know what I was going through. She did help me,
mm-hmm.
And so we've become very close. That's a very loving part of the story. I'm very happy about that.
It's really a loving book, isn't it? It's just.
I'm glad. I thank you. I appreciate that. I think it's really a very. I actually call it a comfort book. and I actually didn't even. I wouldn't even have used that term at all, or thought about it that way. Except my book tour began. During this Wall Street craziness. And so it's very surreal. It's almost Orwellian when you head out in the country. I'm living on this farm in upstate New York with my animals and writing, and I'm somewhat I don't watch the news, you know. I don't listen to CNN. I don't follow that stuff very closely. I don't have time. And I don't like it. And suddenly I'm in these airports and hotel rooms where it's like this Orwellian imagery pouring out of the tubes all day. About disaster and doom and despair, and your life is falling apart, and a terrible recession, and you're going to lose your home, and you're going to lose your money, and I was reminded of the power of animals, really. That's why we love them so much. That's why we care about them. That's why you have me on the show, I'm sure. It's very comforting to have them in our lives. They're very grounded. They don't care about the market. They're going to love you no matter what. They don't care how your IRA is doing. And they're very constant, and they're very adaptable. They seem to me sometimes to teach us about what's important.
Mm-hmm.
And not that like you can take that idea too far, but my animals remind me all the time of they ground me because they don't get involved in the foolishness of humans. And it's a shock for me to go out into the country. I thought the book tour would be a catastrophe because, my God, everybody's worried about everything and the election's going on. And so I get to Milwaukee and Omaha and places like that, and there's just crowds of people, huge crowds of people. And I said, well, I'm really glad you came to see me. I'm really glad you're here. I was concerned you might be, you know, watching television. They said, well, you know, that's not as important as our dogs. You know, we're not going to miss talking to you because the economy is falling apart. We want to talk about our dog. That's been the case all across the country. I think it's actually made a much more meaningful book tour because our love of these animals and appreciation for them is very heightened.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a website, you know, bedlamfarm.com, where I put up a lot of pictures of these dogs and other animals, and that has also been very affecting for people, too.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about our dogs and other animals with John Katz. His latest book is Izzy and Lenore, which really is a loving book. I love his writing, but this one's one of the best, I think. Two Dogs, An Unexpected Journey, and Me. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, you can do that as well, and that's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Katz is our guest, and his latest book is Izzy and Lenore, Two Dogs, An Unexpected Journey, and Me. And we're welcoming phone calls for him. We start our calls, John, with Liz from Madison. Hi, Liz.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Mr. Katz, you have given me hours of pleasure. I've read all your books, and I'm reading Izzy and Lenore right now. I'm a big dog lover. And I just want to thank you for your wonderful writing and for telling us your story. I can't say enough about how great I feel whenever I read your books.
Well, thank you. That's very nice. I appreciate that.
That is nice, isn't it? It must be strange for you. You spend a lot of time on the farm, and then you come into this very public world, don't you, where all these people know your dogs. And
it's very strange. It's very strange, and I can't say I don't quite get it. But I was at a reading last night, and somebody came up to me and said, you know, how's the rooster doing, and how's Rose doing, and how are the dogs? And you know, I'm always startled a little bit, and like they know every move,
right?
And that's also very flattering. But it is disorienting, I must say. It's definitely disorienting.
Yeah, it's so private and so public almost simultaneously. Diane from Marshall. Hi, Diane.
Hi, I want to thank you for your books and for the opportunity to listen to your talk. I love your books, and I wanted to tell you about my red bone coonhound.
Oh, you have one.
Oh, well, he's dead now.
Oh.
But he was a wonderful dog. He was basically impossible to train, and he had been on his own a long time. I rescued him from a rural humane society, and he had so many problems, but when I would take him to see my grandmother at the nursing home, I hated to go to the nursing home because it was the sort of nursing home we all dread one day, family or ourselves being in, but it was what there was, is, you know. And Buddy, who weighed about 100 pounds and had the most regal, beautiful bearing and ears like velvet, his ears you've never felt anything like. And he would go in, and my grandmother was no longer mobile, but he would go to her bed and put his head down, and she would pet his ears and talk with him, you know. And then the wonderful thing is he would lay down on the floor in this teeny tiny room where there were, you know, two beds with people in them and medical paraphernalia and things, but he would spread his 100-pound body out, all limbs, and he would just sleep. And what was so wonderful is that it really helped me go there because his acceptance of what it was and what he could do and the importance of just being a physical presence, that helped me so much. visit, as well as, of course, it helped my grandmother and it helped the others, because, of course, when he would walk into the place would come alive. There
right.
would be people
yes,
slumped
yes.
in wheelchairs, you know,
mm-hmm.
but it would come alive.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love your call. Thanks, Diane, so much.
Thanks,
John.
Diane.
Yeah. That's an interesting perspective, that it made it easier for her to go as well, because she could see the power of the dog, the power of her dog.
I think the other thing that makes it easier, too, I think it's a cushion. I think it makes it easier for me, too. And we've been doing a lot of work in Alzheimer's and dementia wards, and that's difficult for me. I think as a writer, I find it particularly difficult, that disease.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one I didn't want to go. And the hospice coordinator said to me, well, if you don't want to go, that's the place you need to go, which was good advice. So we started going in there, and I have to say, you know, at first I hit a little bit behind Izzy. He would go right up. He didn't care if somebody had Alzheimer's or was dying or was demented. It made no difference to him. He was a little confused at first because people reacted to him a little differently. But then he would always find a way, put his head in their hands, get into bed with them, lie next to them on the sofa, and he just loves to cuddle up. And he would always find a way to get attention, and that made me more comfortable because it wasn't so much my just trying to figure it out by myself.
Right.
Over time, I did help. I did figure it out. I figured out how to talk to people. And I figured out how to react to them and how to communicate with them. And so now I'm very comfortable. I actually enjoy it quite a bit because the spirits of people remain very much alive. And they're funny. I mean, one woman who we love to see, Izzy, every time we see her, she says the same conversation. She says, why Izzy? She said, I'm so proud of you. You used to be just a little poodle. Now look at you. You're just a big black and white dog, and you're all grown up, and what a great dog you
Aww.
Are. And it's amazing, and she's very proud of him, and he is very proud to be praised. And that sort of thing, I understand what Diane means, because that does make it easier for me to go in there.
Sure, yeah.
You know, when you go in with Izzy, you're always a hit. You know, it's always
going to
work.
Thanks, Diane, very much for the call. Has all of this, I'm sure it has, you talked earlier about you're at the time of your life, and I am too, when you think more about the end of your life. Have you thought about that? Have you thought about, and have you planned for it more in any way as a result of this work, John, of where you want to be and who you want to have around? Have you made any changes when it comes to what you might want to do for the end of your life?
Well, I haven't really made any changes. You know, I don't want to get overly preoccupied with it, because I think when it comes, you know, you deal with it. I do think, in general, I'd like to stay away from hospitals if I can.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing that I'd like to do. I think that's like hospice, you want to be in your home, and you want to be with people you care about, and you want to have some choice. I think it's very important to control the process.
Mm-hmm.
And I think staying out of hospitals is a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
The people we help stay in their homes are very appreciative, and they get to choose the way they die. And hospice, of course, helps keep them comfortable. So that's a big thing, I think, I definitely would prefer the hospice approach. That's the way I want to do it.
Right.
In terms of the rest of it, I'm not really into downsizing. I'm sort of at an age, 60, I'm at an age where, 61 actually, where a lot of people, of course, are, you know, getting rid of stuff and moving into condos and stuff, and I don't really feel drawn to that. I feel that this is a time to experience life and to grow and to learn, and I want to keep doing that. So probably, you know, I'm sure a sane person would say, okay, let's get rid of some of the animals and pare down. But I don't want to get more animals. But I think I don't want that to dominate my life either. I think it could be a wonderful period of life for me. And I want to keep growing and keep changing and keep moving.
Mm-hmm.
And the farm, I think, helps you do that.
Mm-hmm. You sound so much happier than the last time I talked to you. Do you know that?
People
you really do.
People keep telling me that. It's funny. Yeah. People keep telling me that. I hear that everywhere I go.
Huh.
And I'm glad to hear it. I think it's true.
Uh-huh.
I think it's true. I'm trying to figure out why exactly, but I think it's true.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the great thing about book tours and interviews, especially when you do them with people a few times. They have a perspective on you that you don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people are telling me, you know, you're calmer,
right,
and you're happier, and you just sound better. And I've lost 60 or 70 pounds.
Oh, my gosh, John. Ooh, good for you.
So I think I am happier. I think
right.
I think I must be true, because everybody's telling this.
Right, yeah. Steve from Eau Claire, hi.
And thank you, brother.
Sure.
How do you spell your last name? I've never read one of your words, but I might now.
All right, K-A-T-Z.
It is Katz, okay.
It'll change your life.
I don't know. I live on small acreage. We've had any number of animals over the years, and they've always been grounding. But, border collies are so amazingly intuitive, and you you can't find a better dog than a Labrador. I do construction work, and I worked in a nursing home some years back, and people were always genuinely happy when I came, but they just said, you know, okay, it's nice to see you, but did you bring your dog? Because this golden lab would wander in amongst the folks in there, and they had a great time. But those are two breeds of dogs that are so important to, I mean, they're so intelligent and fun to have around.
Well, Dave, I think one thing you and I share, I think, you know, those are working breeds, and I love working dogs. I think they're the greatest dogs. Not that other dogs aren't great, too, but working dogs have been bred forever to do things with people. And so they are very intuitive about people. You know, the Border Collies have been working with people for their whole history. And so have labs. And I think they're dogs you can bring places and introduce to people, and that can be integrated into the world. So I love those. Those are my two breeds. Those are the breeds I always have. I have labs and Border Collies. And I'm just amazed at the things I can do with them. You know, from hospice work to sheep herding to traveling around and brightening up people's days. So I know what you mean. They're dogs you can bring places.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it great that Steve doesn't know about your books yet, and here's a guy
Steve,
with
I'm sorry, right, Steve.
He has Border Collies and labs.
Right. He's gonna get hooked.
Yes, yeah. He's in for a treat when he reads your book too. Thanks, Steve, so much
Thank you, Steve, for your call.
Judy from Waukesha. Hi.
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 Hi, John.
Hi, Judy. How are you? Thanks for calling.
All right. Thank you. And I enjoyed. I'm working, but I happened to tune in, and I just called our Humane Society to listen too. So I hope that they are listening. But I grew up on a farm of everything, and consequently, I do have a lot of rescued animals from HAWS, Humane Society. And when I started working with the seniors in Waukesha County, I had this idea about I could see that seniors would put off open heart surgery and cataract surgery because nobody would be able to take care of their pets while they were gone. And so finally, we have Lynn Olnick, who is the director of the Humane Society here, and she and I got together, and we have a program. It's called PALS, Pets Are Lifesavers, and it's to help older people maintain and retain their pets. So we can help them get spayed or neutered. We can take them to the vet. We can come in and see what's wrong, if there's a behavior problem or if they're in the wheelchair.
Oh.
We can put the litter box and the food up on a card table so they can keep it clean and take care of their pets. Because it's just, sometimes that's the only friend they have. It's the only reason they get up in the morning. And it's been just a wonderful experience with them.
Well, it sounds like a great program. I was in Omaha last week at the Nebraska Humane Society, and they're also reporting a sort of sharp increase in people abandoning dogs again and cats because of the economy. So I think it's going to be a challenging time for the Humane Societies, and a very important time. Money's a little harder to come by, and I think the need is going to be greater. So it's great work you're doing.
Yeah, it sure is. That's a great program. Thanks for your call. Here's an email from Margaret, my favorite name. The following from your book, Dog Days, about training dogs, but so true, she writes, the way to treat people. No wonder you've done well with hospice as well as the dogs. She keeps this in her pocket and only wish she had it while raising kids. Positive and enthusiastic, patient and clear, day after day, month after month. Anger does not work. It's not affected, not effective, not with people, and not with dogs.
Well, thank you. Yes, I appreciate that. That's a very important thing the dogs have taught me. And I think if you work with dogs and train them, you almost have no choice but to be a better human, because you really can't do it unless you are. I mean, you can't really train a dog well with anger, and you can't use impatience. And a dog like Lenore, you know, you just have to love her. And so I think that forces you to see the weaknesses in yourself. My case would be impatience and frustration and sometimes anger. And I have great dogs in part because they really challenge me to be less of those things. And so I think they're a great gift. Anger does not work. Impatience does not work, and frustration does not work. Neither does treating them like children. That doesn't work either.
Thanks, Judy, for your call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. John Katz is our guest this hour. He has a new book, Izzy and Lenore, Two Dogs, An Unexpected Journey, and Me. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Katz, our guest this hour. His latest book, Izzy and Lenore, Two Dogs, An Unexpected Journey, and Me. And let's go to Deborah from Bayfield next. Hi, Deborah.
Hi.
Hi, Deborah.
I have a dog that's
absolutely perfect for this. She comes to the nursing home with me when I go to visit my dad. He's got a Parkinsonian dementia, and it sounds strange, but very comfortable with death because I know that it's not the worst thing that can happen to a person. And I would love to work in hospice, and I'm wondering how we get started.
Well, you're going to call your local hospice group. I'm sure there's one out there in Wisconsin, several, I'm sure. And they'll work you through it. I have to warn you, hospice work is a little tricky with dogs because, unlike most therapy work, the patients can almost never come to you. So it has to be a dog that's very, very grounded and very agile and can get up in a hospital bed or in a wheelchair or get near somebody, maneuver through a lot of equipment, oxygen equipment, IVs, and unpredictable situations. So my lab, Lenore, who does a lot of hospice work, but she can't do that kind of work just because she's too big. Izzy has been confronted with a number of very surprising situations. People dying, of course, while we're there. Oxygen machines going bluey. People getting suddenly agitated or sick. One dementia patient went after him with a walker because he thought he was a squirrel. So you have to have just a particular kind of dog who can get to the patient and who you really trust to just be calm when surprises happen. And if you have that, then you can talk to the hospice program and they'll figure out a way to go through training if that works. Mm-hmm. A lot of temperament testing. And we tried Izzy out 3 or 4 months in different situations to make sure he was okay, because in hospice you don't want to be making mistakes.
Right.
Because it's people's last moments and they're often in physical distress. So, you have to really know. And with Izzy, I really know. We were in a nursing home and some cat came flying out of nowhere and landed on his head while he was lying right next to an IV.
Mm.
And with a different dog, that just could have been a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
But he just shook his head and didn't move and stayed cool. So I think it's a good thing to do, but it's a little bit different from some therapy work. And you have to really know the dog can kind of make decisions on his own that are good when you're not always right there to help them.
Yeah. And she can. She just knows. And like I said, she's perfect at the nursing home.
Well, great. Then I would go call your local hospice group. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they'll check it out.
Okay. Thank you so
Thanks,
much.
Thanks, Deborah. Thanks for the call. Bill is next from Orfordville.
Hey, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
Hey. We work with Samoy Rescue, and so we've run into a lot of different kinds of dogs and things and had a couple of really interesting ones here. But my question is, have you found any of your dogs to have a diagnostic ability? I know we found with some of our Samoys they've identified cancer and some things like that. I have a vascular problem with my legs. My little puppy comes up and checks on that every day.
Mm. I have not. I'm not sure, really, because it might be happening. I just don't know it. I certainly know, there's a lot of talk about the death cat, up in New England, who can tell when people are going to die. I'm a little skeptical about some of that because the, hospice nurses can tell when people are going to die, too. And Izzy definitely does react, however, when somebody begins to die. He definitely backs up, definitely can tell when the spirit begins to decline. And he always gives signs of that. As to specific illnesses, I know that people are doing that work. I have not done it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for the call. Here's an email. John, I was a hospice nurse for 10 years, so I understand the concept in practice. My daughter and son-in-law recently lost a pet. They were struggling with decisions about surgery, medication, keeping the pet alive, probably at the risk of the pet's comfort. I tried to support them in their grief and suddenly realized that pet owners could use hospice for their pets. What do you think?
Well, it's an interesting issue. The emotional issues involving people and pets is growing. I meet people all the time who are just grieving horribly over the loss of dogs and cats, and it troubles me a little bit, really. I think many people many Americans who need hospice don't get it.
Hmm.
So I have to say the idea of giving it to dogs and cats when people don't have it bothers me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think people love the dogs and cats so much. They're dealing with a whole range of ethical issues about how long animals should live, should they be kept alive, how much money to spend on them. And how much to grieve over them. And we're really going to a new space here because these were not issues in America 30 or 40 years ago. People, the dog got sick and somebody put it down. Farmers used to shoot dogs when they got lame. And I'm not recommending that, but But I think we're going to a very different place now where we're spending so much money and emotional energy and time. I would feel better about dogs getting in hospice when I felt the people who were in hospice who needed it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Thanks, Bill, for the call. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. John Katz is our guest, author of Izzy and Lenore, Two Dogs, An Unexpected Journey, and Me. And let's go to Mike from Superior next. Hi, Mike.
Hey,
Mike.
Hey, John.
Hey, Mike,
I haven't had a chance to read your book, but I'm going to have to pick that up because it seems I also have an older border collie and then a younger border collie lab mix. Boy, how can you know? I don't know. Kind of tells you something, I guess. But,
that's a great combination.
The older border collie is like 14. You know, we call him the enforcer because he's getting old and grumpy. He doesn't allow shenanigans with the kids in the house, type of thing. But my wife, she had her uncle and his wife come over, and he suffers from dementia, you know, really bad. He doesn't recognize any of the kids or my wife to that extent. But he never really had a history with dogs, but, you know, boy, he's sure attached to the old one.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, he played, ball with them out in the yard while everybody else was just kind of sitting on the patio, you know, talking, so that, you know, his whole attention for the 2 hours they were there was him and that dog stayed by his side. And I was just kind of, wondering, with people with dementia, if you've seen that they have more, that they click faster with the dogs, is that like 10,000 years of instinct, all of a sudden it's there and it's always been there, or, you know?
I do see that. I see it all the time, that people who haven't spoken or who've been very confused, who are angry, the dog changes them. They calm down. They're able to talk more. They remember more stories from their lives. They remember their own dogs. I don't know what's happening other than the fact that I think it's a combination of instinct and tactile response. I think a dog, as has come up several times in these calls, a dog just triggers a positive response in people. People associate dogs with something good in their lives, and they feel safe and loved. And they don't always feel that way about people.
Mm-hmm.
And dogs are very safe because you can't make a mistake or offend them or say the wrong thing. And if you're confused, that could be an issue too. What I feel from watching is it just opens up a little channel of love and memory. And I think people go back to a point in their lives where they had pets and had animals and remember them. And I think that's a process that's very healing. We had one hospice patient actually went off the hospice rolls after Izzy started.
Oh, that was quite a story, wasn't it? You missed them, so you kept going back even though they weren't on the rolls, right?
Yeah, he just started to get clearer, and they took him off the rolls. And that doesn't happen a lot, and I wouldn't want to overstate it, but I certainly see a huge change in people when Izzy comes regularly to see them. And the nurses will tell you that they're calmer, they're easier to handle, they're happier, and they have better memory.
Mm-hmm.
And exactly what's going on with that, I can't say that I know. I think it's some ballet between the dog's instinct and people's needs.
Mm-hmm.
It goes at work there.
Yeah, you want somebody to study that. I know they're studying the effects of music, certainly, on people with Alzheimer's and dementia, and how you can remember songs. But dogs must have a similar, but who knows what effect.
I think part of the story for me is what I call the mystery of it. You know, we live in a world where everybody wants answers and everybody has studies and everybody's, you know, there's a lot of dog experts with answers about everything. And I think the truth of the matter is, honestly, I've read all these studies, I've talked to people. There's a gray zone here that I just don't know. I think it's a mystery. And I think what Izzy's doing with people is, and other dogs as well, and other therapy dogs, is a little bit beyond me.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that I reinforce certain behaviors. I can see him react to attention and need. I can see him feel appreciated and approved of. It's become work for him. But as to what's really happening between the chemical synergy between him and some of these people, I have to say it's a bit of a mystery to me.
Right.
And it's okay with me to leave it there.
Right. Yeah, I see what you mean. It's quite a sight to behold. And it's quite something to read about as well. It's good. Mike, thanks for the call.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, Gail is next from Ephraim. Hi, Gail.
Hi. Oh, this is wonderful. I got to be in the car and I'm on my cell phone. But I wanted to call. I'm glad I got on. I actually do really deep psychic emoting healing with animals, and I work with people. I've been like this my whole life, and it's so wonderful that people are finally starting to get more open to this, what John's talking about, the mystery part of things,
yep.
Where I actually go in that gray zone, and I live in that gray zone a lot with the abilities that I have, and I share that with people who bring me their rescued animals with all of their issues. And animals, I have found, with the way that they work with their emotion body, with their energy field, they can sense that, and they live very telepathically, and they really do sense things, but things, they absorb more than people really realize, which is, I think, why they really are able to go in and help people who have lost that ability to communicate, but they actually are still communicating, and they connect with these animals on that telepathic and emotion body, and it really does send incredible things, but it can also be really hard on animals that are in abusive situations, because then they have to also find a way and find someone who can help them emote out their issues, and that's what I do with animals. And I've done my own research work on it, and it's fascinating how much more animals really have an ability to do that we're learning from them. So it's fabulous that people are getting more involved in this with the animals.
Thanks, Gail.
Thank you. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Let's go to Janet next from Bristol. Hi, Janet.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Great, and yourself?
Thank you, very well.
Good. We have standard poodles here, and we bred for temperament. This year we donated 6 puppies to become hopefully guide dogs and at Pilot Dogs in Columbus, Ohio. But I'm wondering if there's any information that you may have of where a breeder could donate good temperament dogs, where they could get training right from the very beginning of life.
I don't have that information. I think I would call your local. There's therapy groups everywhere, probably your vet may know that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that information right available to me, but your vet might know that.
Yeah, thanks for the call. You went through pretty rigorous training with Izzy for hospice, didn't you? It was quite a program, John.
It was quite a program. We had about 12 to 16 weeks of training altogether. It was very intense. I appreciated it. I needed it, all of it. There was almost no part of the training I didn't end up using, from, you know, what to do in emergencies when people were sick, how to talk to people, how to react to need, and, of course, with Izzy. Izzy came with me to every class, every bit of the training. He sat in on all the instructions. He became very close to the instructor. He paid rapt attention. During the break, he would mingle with people and go back and stare during the classes. And everybody in the room got the sense that he was very serious about it. And no. He also went into these, you know, for a couple of months, we went very cautiously into a bunch of different homes. And, he's never misfired, you know. He understands. I did have to encourage him to understand that the people were the work. They weren't a distraction. So once he got that, that became his work. And he's very keen. He does crash when somebody dies. He kind of gets very logy for a day or two. He gets very, you know, down.
Mm-hmm.
He looks very drained. I think it's very draining for him. And then a day or two, he's right back to go.
Huh. And what about you?
I think it's draining too. I think I'm very careful about not, I don't want to see these as my crises, because, you know, the last thing you want people to do is be worrying about me.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them you get very close to, some of the patients, and it's definitely hard. And when I find it happens, I just go to the hospice social worker and I whine and moan for a bit. And they keep a close eye on me, I have to say. And if they think I'm getting, you know, too tired or too drained, they just, you know, they tell me to take a few weeks off.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
But it's a very important part of my life, and I really value it.
Right. Good, good. Stephanie from Madison, we have about a minute left.
Okay. I'll just say what I have to say, and I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, Stephanie.
I've kind of got an interesting situation. Disability getting worse, I've become legally blind. Actually had negative experiences with dogs as a kid, scared the hell out of me. I'm really opening up to the possibility of dogs in my life. We have cats. But what he said about patience and learning good qualities resonates with me. So thinking about maybe kind of like mentally preparing myself to maybe have a dog in my life. I'm going to hang up and listen.
Okay, Stephanie, thank you.
Well, Stephanie, that's great. I think there's all kinds of research, and I've seen it. I think dogs make people feel better. They make them feel calmer and safer and more loved. And there's millions of dogs that need homes right now. So you could hardly do better than to get one, I think, and work on some of those issues with a dog. I think they're, you know, that's what they do. And the dogs have been in service to people forever. And there's lots of great stories about them. So good luck.
Thanks for the book, John. This was my favorite. I've read all
Thank
of them.
Thank you.
It is. It's my favorite.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's doing very well, and I'm a little surprised. You know, I was concerned about whether people want to read a book about hospice, but they definitely do.
Sure.
And I appreciate being on your show very much.
Thanks, John. Always a pleasure to have you and to have new books from you as well. John Katz, our guest this hour, author of Izzy and Lenore, most recently. He's written a ton of books, Two Dogs, An Unexpected Journey, and Me. And we thank him for being with us. Dog Days, A Good Dog, Cats on Dogs, The Dogs of Bedlam Farm, The New Work of Dogs, A Dog Year. He's written all kinds of them and always much appreciated. So thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour. I feel like all I want to do is go home and see my dog now, which wouldn't be a bad thing to do, right? I'll go see Murph. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning as well for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios, and thanks for all of your marvelous calls. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Tomorrow at 9, we'll be analyzing tonight's presidential debate, so join us. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.